Welcome back to the Troop Leader Experience Podcast. I am back with another interview. You always tell me that the interviews are your favorite. So here, I've lined up several in a row for you. But take it away, special guest. Tell us about you. Who are you? What council are you from? And a little bit about your troop.
My name is Maggie. I am a troop leader in Northern California, or NorCal as our council is called. I have a school-based troop that is finishing up our third year now. So we're little. We started as daisies and brownies, and we now have second year brownies, and first year brownies are the oldest, but we have kindergartners, first graders, second graders, and third graders, and are about to now have our third level. There's currently a total of 34 kids in the group. We all go to the same school, which is helpful in a lot of ways, but it is a very large troop. We don't meet as a multi-level troop. We meet daisies on one Thursday and then brownies on another Thursday. So I am leading meetings every week. So that's what we have 8 in each grade, except for the third grade, which is the oldest, and the trailblazers. They only have 6 kids in that group, but that's what our troop is like in a nutshell.
Okay, that's really impressive to have 34 girls, but then also if you're splitting them, so it's essentially like you're running 2 troops, but with the same troop number, same bank account, I'm assuming?
Correct. So it's all one troop number. We have one treasurer, we have one cookie chair, but no other leader. So I am responsible for coming up with what's happening at each of the meetings for both of the groups.
Wow. Okay. Big tasks. Do you find that you're able to use some of the daisy programming that you figured out before with the new crop of daisies?
Yes. So this is my third year running daisy meetings. I'm trying to think of what are the ones that I have done for a second time completely. And the Julia Gordon-Lowe birthday meeting, we have now done that for 3 years in a row, and it's the same meeting each year. So I'm not starting from scratch on that one. I think we are just now at the point of redoing badges for the first time and the petals. Like, surely I've done, it's a good question. And actually now I'm like, what are ones that I've repeated? And background of how I got here to this point where I have taken over this monstrosity of a troop. We started as a new troop with a bunch of moms who said they were interested when our kids were in kindergarten. I did not take on a leadership role at the start of this project, but I came to all the meetings, and we were like living in a world where all the moms were coming and yakking in the background or sitting around doing nothing while different people were taking turns. So it had set up as a co-op, but we weren't officially a co-op in the MyGS system. And as I was observing these meetings and seeing what was happening, the one that drove me over the edge was the space adventure or space explorer. I can't remember what exactly the daisy one is called, where we did the thing where the kids were lying on the ground, tracing each other's bodies, and then making that into a constellation. And I didn't say anything to the people who are running that meeting, but in my mind, I was like losing it because there are real constellations in the sky. Why are we having little kids make up pretend constellations that don't exist? What is the point of this activity? Is it to introduce the concept of constellations? And I think even as kindergartners, they already know what constellations are. They've heard of this before. Why not actually do real constellations or plan to have a meeting where you can actually look at them or do something more meaningful than this weird art project that is just going to go into the trash and has not actually accomplished or achieved any meaningful content for the kids? So I got invested in trying to come up with more programming. And I later learned that is literally what the virtual toolkit says to do, is to have the kids do this activity. So I have a lot of opinions, mostly negative, about what the official programming for meetings is. And I started taking over all the meetings and coming up with new programming from scratch, which is not an area that I have a background in. I have worked in tech for 20 years as a content writer. I do not have a background in early education or with kids at all, other than the two that I have birthed. So I have been spending loads of time researching and coming up with ideas for how to run meetings that I think are meaningful, age appropriate. And I also have a really strong self-imposed pressure to knock meetings out of the park all the time because I feel very, I see it coming that I am competing with other activities and the other things are going to take kids away from Girl Scouts. But if I make an amazing experience, can I make them stay? And so far, it's only been 3 years. I don't have a like this track record of amazingness, but the troop is growing and we have wait lists and people wanting to be a part of the program. We'll see how it goes at the end of this year if we continue to do that, because I am making some changes and I can't keep up this 5-grade level program. But that's where I am with how I got here. I took over this co-op experience, became a singular leader with no other co-leaders. I did it to myself. And now I have too much on my plate to handle alone. But I definitely still have parents who are there and are like helping at meetings or helping with carpools, but nobody else who's like driving the train.
Yeah, I feel that. And I think a lot of people in our community can relate to that. First of all, I want to just say that, yes, the self-imposed pressure to knock it out of the park is something I relate to so hard. And for anyone who has listened to this podcast for at least a few weeks, this is about me. This is I think big. I'm like, what's the highest impact thing we could do? And we've talked about this on the show before, but the Facebook groups can almost be dangerous because when you hear about what some troops are doing, that's like S-tier Girl Scouting. It's like, okay, so that's, if I'm not doing that, then I'm falling short. And I need to figure out how to get my troop from wherever it is to there. And it's so funny because the activities that the girls reflect back on and say are their favorites are not always the knock it out of the park meetings that we put so much love and care into preparing. Sometimes it is, but some of the things that they love the most are the smallest moments. And yeah, I think that's a really hard thing to balance when you're an overachiever. And I don't know if you're into the Enneagram, but I am an Enneagram 3. So I'm very driven by my accomplishments and I measure my self-worth by what I'm accomplishing. And it's very hard not to let that carry over into Girl Scouting. But I also think that's one of the things that's so important about Girl Scouting is the longer you do it and the more meetings you do, the more and more you get that reinforcement that not every single meeting can be the best meeting. So first, let me just acknowledge, I so understand and empathize. And then, yes, that was my next question. So next year you have Daisies, Brownies, Juniors, but you're out of Thursdays. What's going to happen next year?
So I have in the past month been telling people that I am not going to lead meetings for kids in the grades that I don't have. So I have a kindergartner and a second grader. So I will continue to lead those. They'll be second grade Daisies and second grade Brownies next year. I will not take on the new kindergartners myself. And we have a lot of siblings who are coming up as kindergartners. So they exist already. So the first year Daisies, the first year Brownies, who are currently first graders, who I am now with them for their second year, I am letting them go. And the new juniors, I'm also letting them go. And there is a mom there who she led that group on her own when they were Brownies last year and the rest of the group was Daisies, but she didn't have any helpers. So I would sometimes go to those meetings and help her, but she was driving all of the agenda. She did not want to lead the meetings for the Brownies this year when it was a group of, I think we have 18 kids in that group and it is an enormous group. And there's just like I think a personality type that needs to be able to wrangle that size group of kids. And I wouldn't say that I enjoy it, but I am capable of being loud and being that person who can deal with that many kids. Her daughter, this woman who will be leading the juniors, the new juniors, her daughter is very active in gymnastics. And so her schedule is a little bit all over the place and she's going to try to just do ad hoc scheduling. I don't know how that will go. I am trying to not feel a lot of guilt about wanting to be involved in what will happen and making sure that there is something that works for as many people as possible. And the first graders, actually, my current first graders who are going to be on their own next year as first year Brownies, I'm very attached to those kids. And it's really hard for me to say, I'm not going to take care of you next year. And I don't see a clear leader emerging. And I'm a little bit afraid or don't totally trust myself to just let the cards fall, if that's not a saying, but I don't know how it's going to pan out. And I can see myself giving in and saying, okay, no one's stepping up. I guess I will figure out a way to lead a third meeting. But there are 8 kids in that group and 12 kids currently who are the first year brownies. I cannot have a group of 20 brownies all in the same, like just getting them all in the same room, having enough parents available to do carpools for a group of that size, like it's just not possible. So whatever happens, it needs to be at a separate time and location. So I'm letting people go. And I've been telling them that it is happening. And there's not like someone stepping up and saying, this is super important to me and I will be there. A lot of the moms in that group do work full time. And I should add that I don't work at all now. I lost my job during the early days of the shutdown of the pandemic and just somehow never went back. And I can see psychologically in a therapist kind of way that I'm using Girl Scouts as a fill in to find this value for myself that I would have typically gotten from having a job and a salary. And so I'm doing this instead. But I also have a kid with some special needs and she has a lot of like therapies and things that have to be dealt with. And it feels challenging for me to try to even consider going back to full-time work. So anyway, my first grade group, a lot of moms who are working full-time, and the structure and format and schedule that we have been doing so far is just not feasible for people who work full-time. And I have never wanted to say that you can't do this if you have a job. I think that Girl Scouts should be for everyone, and it should be possible for kids with two working parents or single parent families. I don't want to exclude anyone, but I don't think I can figure it out for them how to make that work. That if you can't do an after school daytime schedule, what else can you do? There has to be something. Because I know some of those moms are invested in it, but they just can't do that during the workday time for meetings. So I don't know what's going to happen yet. I'm in the stages of trying to figure it out for everyone and begging them to please participate in the conversation. So we'll see.
Yeah. So we'll see. Yeah, that's interesting. You'll have to update us and let us know where it goes. And this is interesting on so many levels. First of all, I want to acknowledge that, yeah, it's tough to do. You can't do a during the workday meeting time if you're at work. I know some troops meet on weekend days for that purpose, but families have a lot going on the weekends too. So that definitely gets harder, especially as the participants in the troop and their siblings are doing more and more sports. There's a lot of stuff going on the weekends. I also, when I started my troop and I was working in an office full time, we met at 6 p.m. and that didn't work for a lot of people. We went all the way down to kindergarten and we met 6 to 7:30. And I had some parents express, oh my gosh, we could never do that with kindergartners. And I was like, I totally understand. I can't do after school. So if you want to meet after school, you're going to have to do it yourself. So I totally do understand. And the other thing I wanted to say is that what's interesting is one of the things you led with is, if I can create this really amazing experience, can I keep girls in the program? And what's interesting is you can't control everything. You can't control every aspect of what would keep this program accessible and possible for girls. And so no matter how amazing the experience is, you still need help. And you can't serve every girl yourself as one person. You just can't. And so it's interesting because I think the reasons for turnover are so, and like the struggles with girl retention are so varied. And we just do the best we can. But and I said this recently too, but one of the huge benefits that I want to really reiterate is that even if girls are part of Girl Scouts for a really short period of time, if we are doing the GSLE principles, the girl-led, the hands-on learning / learning by doing, and the cooperative learning, then they are getting the program regardless of what else is happening, regardless of how out of the park the meeting is. And even if they only did that for a couple of months, it still has lifelong impact. So let's all take like a collective permission slip to pat ourselves on the back that what we're doing is great and it is more than enough. It's a wonderful addition. Okay, I'm curious about your kind of backstory. Were you in Girl Scouts when you were growing up?
I was not. I have twin brothers who are 20 months younger than I am, and my parents opted for Boy Scouts to get the most impact out of their parenting contribution because I had two boys and one girl. So I was not in Girl Scouts, but I was very obsessed with their Boy Scout experience. So no, I do not know anything about the traditions or what the smell of Girl Scouts is supposed to smell like. I did not know anything about that. So that has been a huge learning curve. And is another area that, as an observer, as an outside mom observer sitting on the sidelines at the beginning of our experience, once I got into the Facebook rabbit hole of seeing what was out there, that's when I started to learn things like, oh, our kids are not doing the promise and the law at the beginning of meetings, or they haven't really been introduced to that at all. They're not doing the friendship squeeze at the end of meetings. Like, the sort of structure and traditions of the meetings had not been established and weren't happening. And there was no one who was digging in on what else was out there. So there was no one who was seeing like what the Juliet Gordon Low birthday was all about, or what World Thinking Day was about, or what these like touch points across the year were. And so that was like another contributing factor to me stepping in. It was also, I think it was like about this time in the first year in March. So we had run out of the people who were like raising their hands to say, yes, I will run a meeting. There was no one in charge of saying, I will chase after people to make sure someone is signing up for meetings. I think the idea of just having a group of parents say they all want to do it together, it sounds really nice, but you still need to have someone who's like driving the train. Otherwise, people just don't. And I feel like this in all volunteering aspects, that people just don't automatically sign up to volunteer for stuff. That's my backstory, and also a ramble about other things about the origin story of our troop.
Yeah. I'm curious, with the feelings that you had being, I think you used the word obsessed with your brother's experience in Boy Scouts. Now BSA is available for girls, right? So how did that influence your decision as a mom for your girls about the two organizations and Girl Scouts compared to being in BSA?
So the other moms who started this started a Girl Scout troop. So that's was like the deciding factor. But then when I looked into it, I do think that giving girls an opportunity to try things out and to take on leadership roles without having to compete with boys or to have any kind of like gender stereotypes coming into play is important. Now that I've done it, I also feel like the fundraising for, and I don't know a ton about fundraising for Boy Scouts, but it seems to me that fundraising for Girl Scouts is significantly easier, which seems crazy because it is not easy. It is a horrible undertaking, but I don't want to sell popcorn for $20 a bag. People will chase you down the street saying, hey, I've been looking for you and your Girl Scout cookies. So the fundraising part, if the fundraising for cookies was not what it is, I might consider Boy Scouts or Scouts. I'm not even sure what we call it if it's not Boy Scouts, but I might consider that more seriously if I thought that the fundraising opportunities were there in the same way as they are for Girl Scouts, because having the funds available is what I think makes this program to a large degree like what it is for us, that we're able to do the things we're able to do because of the money we raise. If we didn't raise that money, it would just be a play date where people are dropping off their kids for me to babysit in hopefully a fun way. But because I have funds to work with, I can provide more meaningful experiences. So I think the fundraising is important. I don't think all the parents see it that way and are happy to just drop their kids off and don't really care what's happening. But I'm not a babysitter, so I do care about the fundraising. So that's largely why I wouldn't go the Boy Scout route unless I heard from someone that the fundraising was different than I understood. We also have had some parents try to get Boy Scouts off the ground at our school. And it's like a whole undertaking that I don't really understand the story behind, but you can't just start a Boy Scout troop. You can't go online and say, start a new troop. There's like a whole thing that it has to be like a fancy Boy Scout, Eagle Scout. I don't know. It seems hard to actually start a Boy Scout troop.
Interesting. I've never tried to, so I don't know about it. I have shared this on the podcast before, but I really try to be open-minded. I really try to, but I am like Girl Scout through and through. So I feel very protective of my Girl Scouts, and I struggle with Boy Scouts expanding their K-5 programming to girls out of a money grab because they wanted more membership fees and not out of what's best for the kids. That doesn't mean that the volunteers involved are not caring about, obviously, I'm assuming the volunteers involved are very invested in what's best for the kids. So I definitely am making the assumption that all kids can have a positive experience in Scouts BSA, but I am having to check my prejudice at the door. I feel very passionately go Girl Scouts, but anyway, so I'm always curious when people know maybe a little bit more than I do about it, what their opinion is. Okay. So you mentioned meaningful experiences in relation to having funding, but speaking of meaningful experiences, what is one of your proudest moments as a Girl Scout volunteer?
Oh, I had a kid who was not going to go on our camping trip. Prior to the camping trip, we did the Daisy's camper badge. Again, I can't remember the name of the badge, sorry, but it's the one with the little like triangle hut. And anyway, we did a meeting. This was not like a fantastic magical meeting, but it was like the preparing to go camping meeting. And this kid changed her mind and went on the camping trip because suddenly she wanted to go. And that, I don't know if that's the proudest moment, but that's the first one that I'm thinking of, a kid saying, I don't want to go camping, I don't want to do that, and getting this taste of it and saying they want to go. I feel like spending time outdoors and appreciation and stewardship of nature is one of the most important things that I can pass on to these kids who are maybe not getting that in the same way just in their family experience. And so that was very meaningful to me to have that.
Yeah, I love that. What's one of the coolest adventures or experiences you've had with your troop?
It's challenging to not just be like, today, what's happening today? Because I am existing in this universe where I'm like constantly thinking about the next meeting and what's happening next. So today I'm taking the Daisy group, the kindergartners and first graders, to do the Eco Learner badge. And that badge I definitely do know the name of because it's happening today and I've written it down. But so we're just going for a hike and doing the steps to earn the Eco Learner badge while we're doing that. So this is not a tremendous adventure, but the kids are really excited. We're not having rain. We're here in Northern California. It's been raining nonstop all through cookie season. We're not having the rain for the first time in months. So that is exciting for everyone to be out, not stuck in the library again, which is where we usually meet when it's dark and raining. Is our public library lets us use a meeting room. I think the Brownie Home Scientist badge is one that was a huge amount of work for me to put together to do 5 science experiments. But I think that one was like really enjoyed by the kids a huge amount. And that one I did not do anything really like unusual that people would not have heard of. I did not follow the GSUSA prescription for that meeting directly. I did do a lot of research on what other people had done. So I was picked and choose from like different activities, but none of them did I come up with like independently. I picked them out independently and then cobbled it all together. But also
if you actually came up with the science yourself, that would be a whole other level. I'd be like, there's a lot of kid science experiments that other people have already figured out. So I'm glad you didn't do that.
But it was like me Googling like density experiments for kids and then coming up with like different things. And I think what I ended up doing for density was the thing where you put different food colored liquids into a jar, carefully pouring them so they would layer, and then dropping in different items into the jar to see where they land in the different density liquids. And I can't remember if that was something that I found in a Facebook group that someone linked to. So it was definitely someone else's experiment. But that one in particular, because it was 5 different science experiments, I was looking at all the different options to illustrate these different principles. And it's crazy to me that I do not have a background in this. And like for 90 minutes, I need to be an expert and be able to talk about things like density or static electricity. And like, why does this happen? So just to learn enough to be able to talk about it for 30 seconds, like I know what I'm talking about. And then today we're doing the Eco Learner badge. And now I need to be able to talk about why we walk on trails and not on the grass. And should we never walk on grass? And do the park rangers go out there and weed the trails, or do they not have grass on them just because people walk on them so much? So trying to figure out like the answers to those questions before I go take these kids to go do this thing. And then next week we're going to go something else. So I'm constantly having to be like a micro expert on various topics, unless I have. So next week we're going to, there's a bug museum on the Cal campus, and we're going to go visit that. So I do not have to be an expert on bugs next week because I have someone else to go talk about that.
Yeah, that is a really interesting part of leading these troops, which is that you don't have to be an expert, but you have to be ahead of whatever the level is that you're working on. I need to know more than a third grade level of density. And did I know more than a third grade level of density before I led the home scientist badge? Honestly, I'm not sure. Definitely, I learned. I took science all through high school. Obviously, I had at least high school level science knowledge. But yeah, not really. I don't do science experiments regularly in my life. Yeah, I don't. Anyways, I totally hear you. And I think especially with the engineering badges, that's where I started to really feel like, okay, I literally never took an engineering class in my life. So when it comes to kind of those principles, I'm like, I'm literally learning at the same time as these girls are. And thankfully, the badge work is broken down into these activities that are for, in some cases, young kids, obviously all the way up to 18 years old. That's not a young kid. But when you're working with daisies and brownies, these initial principles, it's okay, I can learn alongside them. It's going to be fine. But that's also when science experiments sometimes go wrong because I actually don't know the science. I will never forget. So my troop loved the science meetings. Any STEM meeting, they were all about it. And I think because it was very hands-on, and they got to see like something come of their efforts. And not all the science experiments were as successful as others. The density one we did was a Skittles rainbow. And some girls had a lot of success with it and some did not. The instructions we had made it sound like we could use a lot fewer Skittles than we actually needed to achieve the rainbow in the water. If you would know what experiment I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. But if you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, I cannot explain it to you because it was also like 6 years ago. The thing I will never forget is we tried to do doodle bots, which I had seen in a Facebook group. And I was like, this looks so fun. And so I like Googled about it and I was reading about it and I ordered the parts that I thought we needed with electric toothbrushes from the dollar store and batteries and this and that. And we did not test it before the meeting. And the batteries we got were not the right kind of batteries. So the entire thing absolutely did not work, not functional. And it was just one of those moments where it's, okay, this is above my level of knowledge because I did not even order the right supplies. Cool, 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 cool. Yeah.
What did you do then?
Actually, that was not my grade level. So I did nothing. I was working with a different group of girls, but I was the one who brought the supplies that were wrong for the grade level that didn't do it. I don't know. I guess they just came up with other activities to do, but then they told me afterwards, yes, those batteries absolutely did not work. I was like, darn. Okay. All right. It's fine. Everything's fine. Okay, so one of the things that I love the most about Girl Scouts is that it doesn't just help girls grow, it helps adults grow too. So what is one way you have been impacted or changed through your experience of volunteering with Girl Scouts?
It has definitely made our group of adults much more of a community. We do, because we're all at the same school, we see each other regularly, and so there's a constant opportunity for there to be family socializing around events. We try to do one family camp out a year. It has definitely made me a person at the school who is very tied into the community. And I sometimes feel a little self-conscious that I'm the person that all I ever talk about is Girl Scouts. And couldn't I maybe talk about something else with you, that this is not the only factor of my personality or experience that we have in common or to connect about? But I appreciate that it is the easiest and most direct way to have built this really strong community group among people. But as I say, like when there are people who are maybe considering not coming back next year, or they have a conflict and they're not coming to the next meeting, this goes back to the whole taking it personally thing. I feel like there's some sheepishness and like reluctance to talk to me about what's happening because of that personal investment. And so I guess it goes both ways, that it's great that being a leader has made me be this person that is a was sort of a central figure in these kids' lives and a part of these families' lives, but also that makes me a person that is sometimes, I don't want to tell you that we're not coming to the next meeting, or I feel bad that we only sold 20 boxes of cookies and I know that you wanted us to do more and we just didn't do it. And so now I feel weird about you. So I guess that answer is mixed bag as a response to your question.
So that's a really interesting factor that I hadn't necessarily considered, because I never had my own kids in my troop. So I'm a stepmom of technically a grown young woman who's in her 20s and two boys. So really the two kids that I helped raise are boys. So when I led my troop, I never had my own kid in the troop. And I think that would influence that, because the only reason that those parents would have to talk to me would be related to Girl Scouts. Whereas this is also your mom community, the school community, especially because they all go to the same school. And that I never really considered that would influence then the other layers of this relationship for these other parents in your kids' community outside of Girl Scouts. That's interesting.
Yeah, I do sometimes wish that, can't we just be regular friends? Do I have to be your Girl Scout friend always? But
yeah, I could see that. Okay, what advice do you have for new troop leaders?
It's challenging to achieve this because of the way, and I don't know if this is all councils or all service units, but it is frustrating to me how hard it is to find other leaders. It's hard to find someone locally to say, what are some resources that you would use to take brownies to do their bugs badge? I don't know who those people are. Like, I don't even know if there's a troop at our neighboring schools. We live in Oakland, California, and it's a huge city, and there's like a bazillion elementary schools. Are there Girl Scout troops at each of them? I have no idea. My understanding is that due to privacy issues, they won't just publish a directory, which it all just seems bonkers to me that there's not a better way to connect with peers. But if you can connect with peers, then I would say do that. Find someone who has done it and can walk you through what you're experiencing. I had a friend who lives in a different city than me. So it's like a friend unrelated to Girl Scouts or to school or anything else. It's a friend because of our past younger lives when we had coworker friends. Anyway, is still a friend and now has kids that are our kids' age. She started a Girl Scout troop with her daughter and kids from her school and was telling me about it and was having their first cookie meeting. And I said that I would come. I told her I would bring cookies because I had the connections to our service unit. So I volunteer with our service unit as well. And I know who the person on council is who's in charge of cookies. And so I was able to get cookies for my troop to do our like cookie kickoff time. And I had like, I'm not giving these children 9 cookies to try at our cookie kickoff. So I cut them all up. So I had leftover cookies. Like I had a sleeve of Thin Mints and I had this and that. So I told her I would come to your cookie kickoff meeting and help you with this meeting. And she was like, no, that seems crazy. Don't do that. And I kept telling her that I would, and that I had things that I could bring her. Like I had extra, the order cards and just the stuff that I have acquired from being a person who is actively involved and invested, that they're new and they didn't even know that these things existed. So she let me come. I came to their meeting. Her kids were bonkers, just like my kids. And I brought the cookies. Those parents there led the meeting themselves. I didn't actually lead her meeting. I helped when they were doing practice booths. So I also have a box full of empty cookie boxes that I brought for her as well, so they could have the kids practice setting up a booth. And I had the experience to know, this is what's going to happen to you when you're at a cookie booth. Girls, people are going to come up to you and say, I used to be a Girl Scout, and make eye contact with you and expect you to answer that statement. I used to be a Girl Scout. What should you say? Here are some things that you could say to someone when they say that to you. That if people ask me, I would come. There are some meetings that I could come and say, I could lead this meeting for you because I've done it before and I have the materials, or I could hand it to you, or I could sit down and talk you through it and help you do this, or just be like available for consultation. But as a new leader, it's hard to find those people. So I would say to get connected with your service unit if you can, do the digging that you need to do to try to find connections to get in-person or out loud help, because I think that is huge, so that you're not just like trying to find that Facebook post. Where was it? What group was it in? You have an actual person who can help you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's great advice. And I think it's also something to consider at the service unit level of how do we foster these connections with local troops so that not everybody has to recreate the wheel. Not everybody's starting from zero with resources. We can share knowledge and experience. And if you happen to live in a really remote area, or if you have a service unit that isn't a well-oiled machine or isn't accessible to you or whatever, then just know that is a huge part of what we're trying to do here on this podcast. Also, it's virtual, but we want to make sure that you do not feel alone and that you have a community of other volunteers who are really invested in making this a high impact experience for the members of their troop. So I hope that, and I've seen a lot more of this more recently in the Facebook group where people are asking questions and they're getting a lot of engagement with other volunteers. And it doesn't even have to be me answering the questions, because now there's enough of us in this community who will just be able to support each other in so many great idea sharing and takeaways and lessons learned and things that we're struggling with emotionally or struggling with logistically or whatever it is. I really value that. So if you have Facebook, which I realize this is getting more and more dated. Not a lot of people do not use it anymore. But if you have Facebook, at least for groups, we do have a Facebook group at facebook.com/Girl Scout Podcast. That is the page technically, but there's a link on the page to join the group. So I hope that you will join us there. If you do not have Facebook, you can always email me, girlscoutpodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. I really feel like this has been fun. I think a lot of the people listening will relate to so many of the things you had to say about the level of involvement, the pressure that may be self-imposed, but the pressure that you feel to make this high impact. I think so many of us can relate to that. And I just really appreciate your time. And to you listening, we will see you next week.